Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Everyone, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is great to have you here as always. It's Jesse Green at the Control Panels, and my guest today needs no introduction. Michael Yardney has been around the investment space for years and years and years. I've read many of his books, I've read heaps of his material, watched the videos, and it is an absolute thrill and pleasure to be able to welcome Michael to the show, one of the great Australian thinkers when it comes to wealth. So thank you so much for taking the time, Michael. It's great to have you.
My pleasure being here, Jesse.
Michael, your business, Metropole, has been around forever and a day. And of course, I want to talk to you a little bit about wealth creation more broadly than that. But before we do get into the work that you do and how you've found your way into that, I'm curious to ask a little bit about your background, because I'm 50 this year. I've been around the block a few times, so I've known of your work for years, but there'll be some people who have just discovered you for the first time. And I'm curious to ask if we could fill in that backstory a little bit. How did you get to this point?
Well, always there's a backstory, isn't there? So today, a lot of people recognize me as one of the experts in wealth creation through property in Australia. But I've also, I think, found a particular niche, which is really more about the psychology of success and why some people are rich and others aren't. And so I write a lot about that. I blog about that, podcast. But it came from the fact that I came to Australia at the age of three from a very poor family. My parents were migrants. My parents worked. And a lot of my parents' friends were wealthy. They were rich. They went on holidays and we didn't. So my friends' parents were wealthy as well. And I saw that a lot of them had their own businesses and they owned real estate. And my parents didn't. We didn't go at Christmas holidays and things like that. And I could see that others achieved what they wanted to by, in general, or that's the way I saw it, investing in property. I also saw at that stage real estate agents driving fancy cars. So I wanted to get in early in life and be like them. So my love of property started early. I realized, of course, that there was a lot more to success and wealth than money and how many properties you earn. And so that made me, I guess, ruin the first half of my life chasing the wrong things and chasing money. But over time, I found my passion. And I also found that teaching other people about how to become wealthy and not making the mistakes I'd made or seen other people make, people were prepared to listen, to learn, to pay for that. And so we've built a national company that now has been involved in over $4 billion worth of property transactions. Wow. Representing clients. So we've never sold property, but we give strategic property and wealth advice in a holistic way, because property is really only the vehicle to get there. So What we do is work out where people are, where they want to go, just like you do as a coach. And then we give financial planning advice, wealth advice, strategic advice, asset protection, estate planning. So we build them a plan and then we help them implement the plan. And currently we look after, well, over $2 billion worth of assets for clients managing their property. And actually, I'm really proud. Only 2 days ago, we won another award, Australia's Leading Property Investment Consultants 2021. And that's the first award this year, but we won three similar awards last year. So I'm very proud of my team, Jesse.
Oh, well done. That's a huge achievement, mate. And coming from a humble beginning that you came from, to build that is such an achievement and well done. I wanted to ask you, Michael, because it's one of the observations that I kind of think about this a fair bit too, but one of my observations is that we live in a really wealthy country. Australia is ranked probably in the top 10 wealthiest countries in the world. And I'm curious to ask, you obviously got out of the rat race, but a lot of people don't get out of the rat race. And even dentists who earn quite well by comparison to the general public, some of them never get out of the rat race. And I'm curious to ask you, why do you think that might well be?
Well, firstly, I think you've already hit the nail on the head that it has nothing to do with how much income you've got. So, yes, we see a lot of dentists, health practitioners, other people with high incomes, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're wealthy, and it's mainly because they've got poor money habits, Jesse. They don't know how to do money. They're not what I call financially fluent. Now, this is of no disrespect to the dentists, who are clearly very intelligent people and very good at their field. But they're not necessarily good at other areas because they were taught by, I guess, well-meaning people, their parents, but people that I'd call unwealthy people. So they develop bad money habits. They sometimes spend more than they earn. They don't build an asset base. They never get their money working for them. They're just still trading dollars for hours. But most people don't understand the situation, why they're there. They think the rich are lucky, the rich are greedy. In reality, there's not that many ways, not that many options to get rich. You can invest in shares, you can invest in property, you can invest in your business. But these are opportunities available to everyone, particularly our audience in Australia. The big difference I've found, Jesse, is that the rich think differently. They think in a different way. They have what I call rich habits. They're programmed in a different way, while the poor, and this is not a judgment of people, because in Australia, the poor still are wealthier than most other countries and people would love to swap places with them. But as I mentioned, the poor have got unwealthy habits and the rich think in a different way. They act in a different way. Well, the average person in Australia has picked up the wrong habits. So today they're driving around with one foot on the accelerator and one on the brake. They're doing some good stuff, but they're doing other things, Jesse, that's holding them back.
So it's a really interesting point about the psychology and the thinking and the habits and so on. I'm just curious to ask a little bit about some of the things that do differentiate the wealthy from the less wealthy or the rich from the poor. And as you say, it's not a judgment value on the quality of the person, far from it. It's really just understanding why some people achieve financially in their life and others don't. I'm curious to ask you if we can dive into that a little bit to kind of understand those habits, understand those thought patterns, because like you, I came from humble beginnings and I've had to learn those things outside of the family construct because they weren't part of my upbringing. So there'll be a group of people listening to this show who perhaps like you and I came from more humble beginnings and need to learn some of those things. So can we give them a few of those things to think about, please?
Sure. Well, again, we weren't born knowing how to do money. We were programmed, as I said, by unwealthy people, by things you heard, by things you saw, by things that you experienced when you were young. So interestingly, my father, his financial plan, and I still remember it well, was he'd sit at the kitchen table on a Saturday morning drinking his black coffee and smoking a cigarette, and he used to write numbers on bits of paper. And I asked him, what are you doing? And it was what he was going to do when he won the lottery. That was his financial plan. He thought that's the only way he could see out of it. And unfortunately, a lot of Australians still do that. And I guess the lottery is a tax for people who can't do maths. But we've been programmed badly. The trouble is most of us wake up every day and most of what we think is 90% of what we thought before the previous day, but we're expecting a different result. So I think the first step is to actually understand how you're thinking, why you're thinking, some of these bad habits, some of these poor thoughts. And in fact, I've written an international bestseller on it called Rich Habits, Poor Habits. And it's based on my mentoring of a lot of successful and some unsuccessful business people, entrepreneurs and investors. And my co-authors were Tom Corley, who did a 5-year rich habits study in the United States. And what he found was wealthy people, and this is a long way of getting to your answer, the answer to your question is wealthy people have particular habits that they do over and over again, and poor people similarly have habits that they do which don't get them where they want to. So I think it's really good that you asked the question, because the first thing is to recognize that you have got some bad habits, and the next thing is then to eliminate them and replace them with good habits, because habits happen subconsciously. So to answer your question, one of the first habits successful people have is that they keep learning, they keep reading, they keep educating themselves, but not for entertainment. They don't keep reading for entertainment, and not necessarily educating in your field of dentistry that you've got to continuously do, but just in the world in general and with regard to money and finance, because as I said, we're not taught that, so most people aren't financially fluent. I think another really big habit is delayed gratification. Spend less than you earn, save, put it aside. And once you've got a big enough deposit, buy. In my case, I like investing in property, and we recommend that to a lot of dentist clients, or in shares, but actually start to get your money to work for you and have a long-term goal. You've got to learn this delayed gratification. If you do the easy things now, you're going to have a hard life later. If you do the hard things now, Jesse, you'll have an easier life later.
So, Michael, what I really like about the concept of habits, it's a bit like compounding. In a sense, the good habits compound one upon the other over time, and you see that exponential growth. But equally, poor habits compound over time as well. And I guess if you're a 25-year-old and you're spending more than you earn, you probably don't see the effect of that right now while you're 25. You see the effect of those poor habits down the track as well. But equally, if you do the right thing, you might not see those results and rewards up front and early. But you could expect quite reasonably to see some wonderful rewards for those good habits over time as well. So the two lines or the two paths begin to diverge, and there is a point where they're wildly different from one another over time.
Oh, very much so. So while dentists earn a good living, and it's a hard job, it's a competitive world out there, and you have to trade time for dollars, you've actually got to get out of the rat race. If you haven't got your money, that doesn't mean you stop working. Because most professionals won't know anything different and are going to want to continue doing it. But if your money's not making money for you while you're asleep, you're always going to be trading time for dollars. So what you've got to do is start putting something aside and investing it. The problem is we all sort of suffer a bit from lifestyle creep. You earn a bit more so you get a better car. I deserve it, Jesse. I've worked really hard. I've had to put up with all those difficult patients. I've had to do all that education. Oh, I need a bigger house now. Hey, my friend, the dentist down the road's actually gone on a holiday overseas when we could. So do we. So lifestyle creep is one of the things that catches people. But I think one of the big things is they're just so busy. Professional dentists are so busy that they don't take time for themselves, and they deserve to. They actually don't invest in themselves.
It's really interesting, and you're absolutely right. I think most people I know in their practices, in their businesses, they're busy on a day-to-day basis. They are busy. There's not a lot of spare time. So if we're talking about creating some time to invest in themselves, to learn about money, to understand those sorts of things, I know you can't give me a magic number of invest 2 hours a week of your own learning or whatnot, but I've just said I'm not going to ask that question, but I'm going to ask that question because people will probably be thinking, well, how much education? What's a reasonable amount? Do I need to totally shift my focus on this? Or can I do this by reading on the weekend? Or is it something I need to do more than that?
Well, let me give you an interesting statistic. I was recently asked by a journalist, how long does it take to become financially independent through property? And I think I disappointed her when I said 30 years. I think she was hoping it would be quickly. So first of all, it's a long-term process. There's no get-rich-quick schemes, because if there are, you're going to get caught out. And I know dentists are get barraged by people saying, I've got a great property for you. Why don't I get into Bitcoin? Why not get into gold? No, don't do that. So first of all, you've got to understand a little bit about finance and know the right questions to ask. But you can speed up the learning process by getting mentors. You can speed up the learning process of how to run a professional practice, dental practice, by having a coach like Jesse Green help you. If you're the smartest person in your team, you're in trouble, Jesse. So just like they have a coach to help run the business, somebody who sees their blind spots, somebody who tells them what to do, but somebody who's got their interest at heart, not a vested interest trying to sell property or sell structures or super funds or things like that. You can speed up the learning process by standing on the shoulders of your mentors. But you've actually got to – dentists tend to get, excuse the expression, sucked in. They tend to believe people. So they're more likely if somebody says, hey, I got this great investment thing. Oh, I'm so busy. Yeah, just go ahead and do it for me. They can get into trouble. So you've got to know – what's real? What's realistic? And you've also got to know the right questions to ask. Mm-hmm. So how long does it take? Well, it should be fun also. But one of the other rich habits that you're asking me what some of the habits are, is that a lot of wealthy people get up early and join, you may have heard of the 4 a.m. club or the 5 a.m. club, and they spend an hour or two before they go to their professional practice, before their wife and kids get up, working on themselves. It's a really good time to do it. It's a common habit we see amongst rich and successful people.
Oh,
now,
wow.
May I quickly say, before people listen to this and say, oh, you don't have to be rich to be successful. No, you don't. We're talking about money here because you're asking me about that, but it's not a judge of people, and you don't have to be. Obviously, we see a lot of successful people who aren't rich, and definitely see rich people who aren't successful, who aren't happy. But Jesse, I learned a long time ago, any problem money can solve isn't really a problem. So it actually gets rid of a whole lot of issues, a whole lot of problems, and lets you enjoy your life, lets you spend time with your family and your kids.
Yeah, I love that. And you're absolutely right. We see that as well, in the sense that we see a lot of people who make a lot of money, and in all candor, they're not as happy as they could be. And one of the things, Michael, we talk about in the coaching that we do is we talk about different currencies: money, time, and meaning. And if you don't have the meaning piece or the happiness piece in there, the other two become a little redundant. So I really, really resonate with that.
I love to hear that. So when I talk about wealth, true wealth is not just money. It's money plus. You need to have your health. You need to actually be able to enjoy and appreciate it. You need to have somebody to love and somebody to love you and somebody you feel comfortable with. I think that's really, really important. To me, true wealth is money plus relationships, money plus growth. I still believe you need to learn, grow, improve. You need to contribute. You need to give back to the community. You need time too. You can't just be rushed the whole time. So true wealth is much, much more than money, I concur.
Yeah. So if we look at these habits and the concept of the compound interest, whether you've got good habits or poor habits, does that speak to the point of the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer? Is it because the habits? Is that really what we're talking about? That saying, is that tied in with those habits?
Well, that's a really good point, because the answer is over the last year, when a lot of people suffered during COVID, the Australian Bureau of Statistics showed that in Australia, but the same happened around the world, the rich did keep getting richer. And it's because they continued doing the same things. The same opportunities were there for other people. But one of the other interesting habits of rich people that help them keep getting richer is that they believe they're in control of their lives. So when difficult things happen, when bad things happen, and they still get scared, they still get worried, the same as other people, but they believe they're in control. So if you believe you're the pilot of your life rather than the passenger just being taken along for a ride, the more you feel in control, the better you feel. And while the poor tend to be victims, they blame the government, the system, COVID, the boss, my parents, I didn't get a good education. There's no such thing as a rich victim. So you're right, these disempowering beliefs compound just the way the empowering beliefs compound.
I really appreciate that, because again, we've seen, same as what you've seen, the rich have done very well over the last period of time, even with COVID. And I guess that leads me to ask about mistakes along the way. We've spoken about these habits compounding. And even with the right habits, people are prone to make mistakes because we're human. We shoot ourselves in the foot sometimes. So what sort of mistakes trip people up? Even if they've got these good habits, I'm sure that they'll make a misjudgment about something or other. What commonly trips people up?
Well, there's lots of mistakes that people make, and I've made more than my share of mistakes. I'm actually a real success at failure, but I've gotten up one more time. So I think that's one of the things you've got to learn. I've made mistakes in my personal life. I ruined my first marriage. I've made investment mistakes over the years, but I don't think I've made too many of those in the last 10, 15 years. Definitely make business mistakes. I still run a business and we've got 67 employees. I've actually learned what I'm not good at in my business and what I am good at. And so I've learned to have other people around me and have business coaches and people who see my blind spots, so I don't make that many business mistakes. I think my biggest ones have actually been employing the wrong people and holding on to them for too long, trusting people, hoping they'd improve. So that's a business mistake. But I see a lot of professionals do that as well. They have the wrong reception staff, somebody who's not friendly, somebody who doesn't look after them, the wrong dental nurse. And they're nice people. They're okay. They're good people. So it's not fair to let them go. But you've got to look after yourself. So I'm sure that's your area. I'm not going to get involved in teaching people how to run a dental practice. Financial mistakes are really, well, in the field of property, that is my preferred field, the statistics show that 50% of people who buy an investment property sell up in the first 5 years. In fact, many of them sell up before that. So half those who get in have got the wrong finance, got the wrong structures, bought the wrong property, so they get out. And then of the 25 million Australians, there are just over 2 million property investors. So while in my area everyone talks about property investment, in fact, the majority of Australians don't own an investment. But those who do, the tax department shows that 92% of them never get past their second property. Of the 2.1 million property investors, Jesse, there's 21,000 in Australia who own six or more properties. Wow. So there's actually a really, really small group of people who've got a sufficient asset base to actually give them the lifetime wealth, the intergenerational wealth they want. Now, of course, it's not how many properties you've got. I'd rather own one Westfield shopping centre than 50 regional properties. Sure. But the statistics show that most property investors fail. It's because they don't treat it like a business. Jesse, what they do is they go around and buy nearby, next door, in the area they're familiar with, where they want a holiday, where they go on holidays up to Surfers Paradise, and the local estate agents call them ice cream lickers because they're walking down the street licking their ice cream, looking in the windows of the estate agents' shops and buy a property because they're on holiday and they like it. They buy emotionally.
Yeah.
Now, a good friend of mine who's in business only 2-3 days ago told me that he walked into an apartment, the estate agent got him there, and he saw it and he bought it on the spot. Wow. No homework, no research. He sort of fell in love with it. I looked online to have a look. Boy, it's a dud. Having said that, though, what am I going to say? Poor David had bought it and he's already put his house on the market. I mean, it felt like shaking him and saying, hey, mate, you're a good friend. Why didn't you ask my advice? But he bought it emotionally.
Yeah.
We're normal. We're human. And it didn't make sense in size, the fact that he's got a reasonable-sized dog and there's only a tiny balcony and it's hard to get out. But that's a big mistake people make. They actually buy emotionally and they don't think through the numbers and figures. The other mistake professionals make, like dentists, is buying in the wrong entity, buying in their own name. And there's a number of reasons why you'd consider getting proper tax advice before you invest in, whether it's shares, whether it's property, whatever it is. And that is, firstly, the professional liability. Everyone's got professional liability or insurance, but still, there's also tax reasons why you may choose the right legal entity. And there's also estate planning. So I'm not just investing for me. I'm investing for my grandkids now. I've got 11 grandkids. So the game doesn't stop. I'm wanting to give intergenerational wealth. So I'm setting things up for that. So there's some of the common mistakes. Looking at just here and now, buying emotionally, not thinking about the long term, not getting the right finance, and not owning properties or investments in the right entity, Jesse.
It's a really good thing. And one of the things that I know with dentists is we are trained. If we're not trained, we are either innately or trained to be perfectionistic in nature.
Yep.
And I remember going through dental school, it was basically either perfect or it was wrong. There was very black, very white, not much gray in between. And so I know that a lot of people are fearful about making these mistakes and they tend to be high achievers in their work and they expect that degree of achievement is going to translate into other fields. And it doesn't necessarily, because we might think that we're fairly bright, we've done well with our career, done well with our business, but doesn't always translate into other fields. So I guess one of the questions I wanted to ask you is about risk mitigation. It is about the decision-making process, so that if you are going to enter into a transaction, the sorts of things that you can do to minimize your risk, the sorts of things you should be looking for, also just give yourself a bit of confidence to take that step. Because as you quite rightly point out, most people never get past their second property. And I'm assuming something's holding them back. And I'm curious to understand what that is and then how to get past it.
Well, there's a couple of different points there, isn't there? So the first one is dentists tend to be analytical people. That's mm-hmm. right. Now, I want my dentist to be analytical. I want him to be careful. I want him to be cautious. I don't want him to be slapdash. No, maybe it's this tooth. No, maybe it's that one. That's the right thing for that profession. But that doesn't translate very well to other areas, including running a business.
Yep.
Running the business of a dental practice, because there are sometimes when near enough is good enough. I'm not talking about with dentistry. No. I'm not necessarily talking about with investments, but your skills, your education, your high IQ doesn't translate to other areas such as investment, which is part science, but part art. So the data, the numbers, the research that some dentists do when we speak with them trap them, get them stuck because they're wanting too much detail or not understanding the information the detail can give them. So at Metropole, my company, before we even get involved in a property, as suggestion, recommendation, as I said, we put a strategic plan for our clients, which involves numbers and figures and spreadsheets, what's realistic, what's doable, what's possible, what you shouldn't do. But then some, let's be blunt, dentists are so analytical that they want multiple iterations of this. Now, you can almost make numbers say almost anything you want. So the data is important, but you also need the perspective. The data is available, but you need the on-the-ground perspective. So it's part science, the data, and part art. And so we have a research department that does the big picture detail homework and research. And our buyer's agents have been the experienced investors, but there were selling agents before. So we've got our own teams on the ground who know their patch properly and match the. They know why one side of the street sells better than the other or has got better aspect or will be more popular or do better. And it's that sort of mixture of art and science that you can't get unless you've been on the ground for a long time. And so you can't buy that perspective, but you can hire it by using a strategic property strategist and buyer's agent, somebody who takes a holistic approach. So I've almost forgotten the question you asked me, Jesse, but the answer is analytical people sometimes trip themselves up by being too analytical.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And I wanted to ask you again, just while we're talking about perfectionists, people who are perfectionistic in nature, our audience, dentists, tend to self-flagellate. They tend to whip themselves when they do make a mistake. So I wanted to ask you about recovery from mistakes. And then I don't know if this is going to be related, but I've heard you have a phrase that you like to talk about, which is adjusting the wealth thermostat. And I'm curious to ask around the mindset around mistakes, recovering from that. And indeed, I'd like it if we could just kind of segue into what you mean by the wealth thermostat.
Okay. So first of all, mistakes are okay as long as you learn from them. Now, I'm not saying drilling the wrong tooth or injecting the wrong side of the patient. Face is okay. So there's areas where you're not allowed or shouldn't be making mistakes.
Indeed.
But there are other areas in the world that are not black and white. So therefore, if you're so fixed at work, but you come home to your children, to your kids, to your wife, and you're black and white, how far is that going to get you? Not very far.
No.
You're going to get into trouble. So I think most dentists will relate to the fact that there's times when it's relevant to be, it's important, it's critical to be exact with your science, and other times when it's not. And so therefore, be forgiving of your mistakes and be prepared to be flexible. But in fact, in my latest book, Negotiate, Influence, Persuade, I talk about the four different personality styles, and there's lots of different tests. There's DISC profiles and other ways of giving different personality styles. So you've got to understand what sort of person you're dealing with. And analytical people, their biggest fear is getting it wrong and making mistakes. So at least be understanding of the way your mind works and how it's affecting you for the positive and for the negative, and don't beat yourself up if you don't get it right. Just say to yourself, okay, well, If you think about it, 3 years, 5 years down the track, even 2 months down the track, most of those mistakes aren't going to matter. I'm not talking about big financial mistakes, but the mistakes we all beat ourselves up about. And so if that's the case, okay, what have I learned from it? Now, you're not allowed to make a mistake over and over again. That's a different thing.
Yeah, absolutely love it. And what about the wealth thermostat? Michael, could you lead into that for me?
Sure. So I wondered, when I dealt with people, and this started years ago, why most people didn't develop financial independence. Despite living in the best country in the world at the best time in history, it was partly, as you said a moment ago, why people stop at 2-3 properties. And an element of that is they got the wrong properties, the wrong finance. But an element of it is people actually just didn't feel comfortable and they sabotaged themselves. I've seen this with people in their investments, in business, because part of our group of companies at Metropola, as you know, we've got a mutual friend, Mark Creedon, who is a business coach to business people, not to dentists. And we see people, intelligent people, easy to see from the outside, making mistakes. And I picked what they sabotaged themselves. Look, to be blunt, like I did in the first half of my life, I was angry. If you actually try to grow because you're angry, you're cross, and then all of a sudden you get more money, because at home money meant anger, money meant fear, money didn't have good meaning. See, my parents fought about money every end of every month. The budget didn't meet, and so who are they going to pay and who they don't pay? If all of a sudden you get money, you get more of this thing that meant anger in some ways to you, and so people get rid of the wrong thing. They get rid of the money rather than the anger. But there's this psychological barrier that I call a wealth thermostat. In other words, in the room at the moment, there's a pleasant temperature. I can see, even though we're doing an audio, you've got an air conditioning unit above your head, as I have a heating and air conditioning here. And if the window opens and the cold air comes in, the thermostat goes up and it brings the temperature up. If a few people come in the room, the temperature goes down and it stays at a particular level. Well, I found most people have a wealth thermostat also that's been set by the things they heard, the things they learned, the things they saw, the programming they got as a child. And if perchance you end up with a windfall, some money, or your professional practice brings you in more money, and you don't raise your thermostat, Jesse, you're not going to keep the money. I'd like to give you a really good example. I believe if you took all the money in the world and distributed it evenly, it'd be, I don't know, in 4 or 5 years back in the same proportions again. Would you agree with that?
I would indeed, absolutely.
And why is that? That's because you fall back to your thermostat. It's the story of the person who's won the lottery and wins $1 million. And, you know, the story 4 or 5 years later, they've lost it all. Now, I've actually never come across anyone who's won a lottery, but I definitely have come across a couple of people who got significant inheritances, clients who got $1 million, $2 million, they've squandered it. They've lost it because if your wealth, if the thermostat isn't set for a high level of wealth, it brings you back to where you're most comfortable. Makes no sense. It's not logical, but we are not rational when it comes to money. So the very rational, intelligent dentists are not rational when it comes to money.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because money does bring up a lot of emotion. It brings up a lot of interesting thoughts and feelings and so on. And I wanted just to go back to something that you mentioned at the beginning of our show, Michael, just briefly. It just caught my attention. And that was you made reference to the fact that as you had progressed through your life, the things you valued and the things you wanted had changed a little bit over time. And for the listeners on the podcast here that I haven't announced this is almost like a cathartic moment. I'm turning 50 this year. And what I'm noticing in my own life, Michael, is I'm noticing my own values, not so much values, but the things I value changing, my perspective shifting, and so on and so forth. So I wanted to round out our conversation today with a bit of a thought around your observations around those changing dynamics. And I wanted to ask you a question. This is a question that rattles around in my head, and I wanted to put it to you because you live in this world much more than I do, and that is the concept of when is enough or what is enough.
Really interesting, because I've just written a blog on exactly that. Oh, but wow. Let me explain something that wealthy people all share, and that's gratitude. They appreciate what they've got. And what you're grateful for at 50 is very different to what you're grateful for at 25 and what at 68 I'm grateful for. And I learned the concept many years ago, and I think it was from Tony Robbins, and I've had coaching from some of the best people in the world. And when I went through my challenges in life, I was, and some mornings didn't want to get up in the morning, I was taught to actually think about what's good, what you're grateful for, my family, my kids, my wife, the people who love me, my friends, to support me. And so still, and now that I'm having a really good life, to be fair, I'm probably not as good at giving gratitude or accepting, appreciating gratitude as I used to. But unless you're grateful, you'll never feel wealthy. So each week and each night, and I try every night before I go to bed to think what my highlights were, and again, to start the day off in the right frame of mind. And I'm not a metaphysical or a woo-woo person, but what I'm grateful for in the morning, I've got to think of different things. But my highlight during the week is usually seeing my grandkids. And I have fixed times in my calendar that can't be moved, that on Tuesday I see Lisa's kids, on Wednesday I see Amanda's kids, even though they live right next door to each other, but I see them separately, so I've got time with them. I see them on a Friday night, I see my kids. So the bottom line is, I'm grateful for very different things today, and it does change. But I'm grateful every morning. I live in a beautiful penthouse, and I hope I never lose that gratitude, because if you do, you're not going to enjoy or appreciate life. So wealthy people do understand the importance of gratitude, and whether it's health or other things. Yeah, I'm after different things in my life today than I was many years ago.
Yeah. Michael, what I've really appreciated about our conversation today is, it's very principle-based. It's not a go buy this property, buy that share, da-da-da-da-da. But what I think you've given people really is much more valuable than any tactic, and that is a thought process, and that is a scaffolding to really anchor your thoughts to, and to a way to consider various things. And I want to say thank you for that, because I think it's immensely valuable for our listener. Obviously, if people want to find out more about you, I've read many of your books. They're really great. So for the people listening, please just go out and read everything that Michael's ever published, and that'll be great. I feel like Molly Meldrum, do yourself a favor saying that.
You couldn't read everything, but every day there's a newsletter that goes out at propertyupdate.com.au. If you're a podcast listener, as you obviously are because you're listening to this, the Michael Yardney podcast, which isn't just about property, but it's about success and money. And as you can see, my interest in the psychology of success. So that's great. Because if you don't upgrade your wealth thermostat, me giving you the information about how to buy a property isn't going to work for you.
Yeah. And that's what I really like. That's why I'm getting it. It's the principle-based stuff, because the tactics work when the principles are in place. And so I really appreciate you talking about all of those principles today. Ladies and gents, I'm going to encourage you to jump on Michael's mailing list, get a hold of that email, get a hold of the books. As Michael says, there's probably so much written, you probably can't get through it all, but start immersing yourself in that, because I think it's going to serve you very, very well indeed. And Michael, from all of us here, my deepest gratitude to you for taking the time out of your day to come and talk to us.
My pleasure.
It's been a lot of fun, and I hope we can do it again soon.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Jesse.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.